Heroes are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen to the everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell. The doctor saving lives at your local hospital. The war veteran down the street who risked his lives for our freedom. The police officers and firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur. The creator. The producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what? I can fix that. I can help people. And I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to The Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks of the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence, so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1. Okay, we're live again. My name's Richard Matthews, of course, host of The Hero Show. I'm on live with Nick Lucas. Are you? Can you hear me and see me there, Nick?
I sure can. It's coming through perfect.
Awesome. Glad to have you here today. So real quick, let me do an intro for you so people know who you are. This is Nick Lucas. He is a neurodigital strategist, coach, consultant, author, and speaker. I'm going to look forward to figuring out what a neurodigital strategist is here today. And you're the CEO and founder at X10 Entrepreneur. And I found some of this stuff really interesting. I pulled out of your bio here. You've got 5 degrees, including a PhD from the University of Sydney. Is that right?
It's actually a disorder of accumulating
too many of them. You started doing live teaching in 1997 and sold your publishing company to one of the largest medical publishers, which is incredible. I want to hear a little bit more about that later. And you've been in 2009, it says you shifted entirely online, and you've got students from all over the world now that you help teach your neurodigital strategist stuff. Is that correct?
Almost. But I'll tell you about that when we get to it.
Okay, awesome. Well, let's just dive right into it then. What are you known for today? Like, what is your business like? What is it that people, when they think of Nick Lucas, what did they think about?
Well, you might appreciate this too. It's a smattering of things because there's quite a few things I do, but essentially there's kind of two camps I'm in. One is I tend to work with CEOs and entrepreneurs, and it's actually mostly around their thinking, all the thinking that has to be in place for them to not just become great entrepreneurs, but actually great people and have a great life at the same time, because I've seen too many people just focus on the entrepreneurship and have everything else fall apart or just not be anywhere near as good as it could be. So it's really about optimizing the life of the entrepreneur. That's one thing. And the other thing is just applying a whole lot of really cool neuroscience principles to, the art of being an entrepreneur. So that's where the whole digital strategy stuff comes into it, because I love marketing. I love crafting messages. I love being able to use the internet as this tool to leverage our time, which is why it's, such a bonanza for entrepreneurs. So there's those two camps.
So on one side you have the internal processes that like people are struggling with to run their business. And then you have the actual like tactics and strategies they use to actually create sales digitally online, that kind of stuff. And you marry those together for sort of a unique outlook on how to grow your business in today's digital world.
I should just say that.
Yeah, it seems really interesting. I've never actually met anyone who focuses on the neuroscience side of entrepreneurship. I've heard a little bit about like biohacking. Is it in the same vein, or is it more on like just how people are thinking, or does biohacking come into it all?
Well, I guess everyone's interested in mind stuff. I mean, the entrepreneurs especially are talking about mindset. It's just that because I've come through an entire different path of understanding the brain and neuroscience, I guess I just have a certain approach and a certain level of expertise that a lot of other people don't. I can bring that to bear. So in the end, we still end up having same conversations about like, how do I think properly about being an entrepreneur? How do I think about my customers, clients, all that sort of thing? But I get to bring my experience in it, and which is often contrarian to what a lot of people think, because we know there's a lot of myths out there, and because it's coming from that scientific perspective, it just brings that information in and that expertise in.
Yeah, and it also comes with a level of authority that a lot of other experts don't start with. It comes from having the, what do you call it? The disorder of too many degrees.
Yeah. That's, That's exactly right.
So tell me a little bit about your origin story. We talk all the time here on the show. Every hero has an origin story. It's where you started to realize that maybe you were different. Maybe you had superpowers and maybe you could use them to help other people. Sort of what started you to develop or discover, you know, the value you bring to this world?
Yeah, well, the superpower thing didn't come till a lot longer, probably after all those, all the degrees, right? It was very, very much an earned superpower as opposed to one bestowed upon me because I happened to, yeah, you know, come into this atmosphere or something.
So more like Batman rather than Spider-Man, right? We had to work for it.
Yeah, exactly right. And go through a lot of pain. Exactly. So I guess the quickest way, the origin story is incredibly humble beginnings. You know, I grew up in a little tiny town in Outback Australia where, at the time, you know, the population was 6,000, and I think that might have included like 1,000 sheep. So, you know, very small little town, and my dad was a pastor, and so we ended up moving a lot. So by the time I dropped out of school, I was a high school dropout. By the time I dropped out, I'd been like 11 years of schooling. I'd been to 9 different schools. So that, I wouldn't say at the time that was necessarily a healthy thing for me personally. Some other people might thrive with that. I just found it very disruptive, and I think it probably brought with it its range of insecurities because you're always the new kid, and you know, there was a range of things about that whole experience that were okay. I mean, we are who we are because of how we've come to be, but it was okay, but it was also not okay. It wasn't the greatest experience. Nevertheless, that's what happened. And so I was a high school dropout, wanted to be a muso, and so that's what I put myself into. And if anything, I'd say that's when I began to discover what a superpower is, and that is just when I go in for something, it's just 100%, 110%. It's like all of a sudden nothing else matters except the one thing that I'm doing. And so music became what I did, and everything, all my money, which I didn't have very much of, but it all went into etc. And then I fell in love with Rhoda, who's my wife, and I realized that this music gig wasn't going to necessarily be a great long-term income earner, and I had to figure out what to do. And you know, I won't go into that down that big path, but I ended up going to university and to get a degree, and so I could, you know,
get some
professional career going on, other than being a muso with a big pirate earring I had at the time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I guess that still, there was no entrepreneurship really going on. Although, you know, I just went through and studied, and I fell in love with, I learned how to learn, and there's a difference between learning and learning how to learn. I learned how to learn. It was a real struggle at first because I was a dropout. And when I went back to university, I ended up getting in through like an alternative pathway, an adult pathway. But I still then landed myself as someone who's older with a bunch of kids who'd just come out of school, a lot of them really smart. And you know, I felt threatened. I felt like I was a fraud, like I shouldn't be there. All of these kids had really traditional upbringings, you know, and they'd been through 2 schools, primary school and high school and then university. And it was like this straight path, and mine was very different. But, you know, I took to it. I learned how to learn, and I did really well at uni, yeah.
That's awesome. So when did the transition from university into entrepreneurship happen?
Well, I was doing a master's degree. We had no money. Like we would have to go and look in the clothes basket sometimes to see if like a dollar coin would drop out so we could go and have a coffee. It was like we were totally skint, as they say. And so to read books, we would go to the local bookstore, and it was a Borders. And so they had chairs and that around, and we would read books in the bookstore because we couldn't buy them. And nice. I read, which a lot of people have read, which is Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Oh, and cool.
That book literally blew my mind wide open because I hadn't had a reason to study money before. I mean, again, because of my background, money was the root of all evil. You know, the pursuit of money as opposed to the pursuit of, excuse me, of being a good person, that they were almost different. So I hadn't gone and read business books. I hadn't gone and pursued that, but it blew my mind wide open. And I realized that I had an incredible father, but he definitely wasn't a rich dad. And we hadn't had any of those lessons. And so this really, really was the turning point. So it wasn't long after that that I launched the publishing company that you talked about. And so I did that while I was still doing my master's degree. And that was really, you know, that was born out of a passion, because the thing that we published, I was very passionate about. It was a scientific journal, and there was a certain type of research that I was really looking to promote. And that journal was a lot of hard work, but it took off, and we ended up with subscribers all around the world, and then got taken up by Elsevier, which is the world's largest medical publishing company. It was great. It was such a ride.
That's incredible. And I like the story too. It actually, I don't know if you know this, it mirrors mine. When the book that got me started into business was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. The difference was my dad put it in my, virtual fist bump. My dad put it in my hands at 9 years old or 10 years old. I was really young. And I became a man obsessed, you know, from that a young age. And I started my first business by the time I was 13, had it shut down by the government like 6 weeks later. And
why? Well, what was it selling?
I was buying candy wholesale at the big box store and selling it, you know, like selling my wares to my friends at school. And I got away with it for about $1,500 worth of profits before I was told that I couldn't sell food on campus without a business license, and I was too young to get a business license. So I had my first, you know, government shutdown when I was 13. But I did the same thing. I convinced my parents at 13 or 14 that they should drop me off at Barnes & Noble, which is similar to Borders, and instead of like at after daycare camp, because I couldn't afford the books. I didn't have any money. So I would, you know, just sit in their chairs and read them after school. So
how cool is that?
Yeah. Same kind of thing that, driving into business. So it's very cool. My next question for you is from your origin story. I mean, it's interesting that you went from being a pastor's kid to late term university to running a successful business. How did you discover your superpower in that? This neurodigital digital strategist stuff. Sort of, can you describe what your superpower is now, and sort of how you figured that out in that journey?
Again, one of those things that was hard won, but I had an incredible lecturer when I was at university in neuroscience, and you know, she was just amazing at what she did. She was a very active researcher as well, so not just a teacher. So she was doing research, publishing research, and I just found her amazing, and she took me under her wing, and I actually ended up then becoming a tutor in neuroscience, and it kind of set me off on that path. I ended up lecturing neuroscience for 10 years. But you know, that was when the real discovery of the brain, you know, excited me, just took hold of me. You know, when they say ideas take hold of people, not the other way around, that was how that worked. So you end up understanding a lot about the brain when you have to teach it. And then of course, given the background I had with my dad, where when I grew up in the house, our house was full of people who also had a lot of problems because of the work he was in. So there was a lot of people there who came in who were injured people, they were hurt people, but our goal growing up was to help those people thrive, right? The idea there is this amazing purpose for everyone, and the question is, can they enter into that? And we all get injured in some way in our life, and those things hold us back. So you can see where it began was this whole, you know, life experience from a very young age of seeing people who are injured who also want to thrive. Then learning all about the brain and then learning all about business, you can't help but then begin to apply all of those lessons across to the doing of business. And so, you know, for a while there later on, when I got into the publishing side of things and I fell in love with internet marketing, and I just went gung ho in that. I learned about SEO and I ended up having an SEO agency, you know, because I was good at it. So I helped other people. There was all these things that I got good at, these other skills, and people would ask me to help them, and I'd help them. And as I was helping them, I'd realize these people were broken, you know, people and not broken as in necessarily needing therapy, but broken as in they didn't believe in themselves enough, or they weren't prepared to take a risk. Like they needed to invest in something and they wouldn't because of fear. And then I go, well, why are you afraid? And all this stuff would come up. And it became this natural occurrence of me working with real people, helping them on the business side of things with the technical cool stuff that I'd learned, how to do webinars, how to do videos, all these kind of things, but it would always spill into the actual person. What's the person experiencing? And so the reason I call it neurodigital is because the whole thing that I'm excited about and continue to be excited about is the way we can leverage ourselves through these digital mediums. But of course, even though it's
digital, you can like unlock it with your mind.
It's So for me, it's applying this to the digital things, and it's that mix together that puts me in a unique situation to be able to talk about both those things. So one minute I could be talking about how to get a big idea for a new product that's going to capture and hook people and get them excited. At the same time, I might be talking to the CEO about, you know, something that's just happened with his staff because one of his key people are just about to leave. And if that person was to leave, everything would fall apart. So how does he go about being a great leader and a great person to deal with this other situation that's just as important as the big idea? And that's where that superpower comes from.
It sounds to me almost like the picture I'm getting in my head is you're the entrepreneur's version of Professor X. Like, you know, you're helping all of us mutants understand our powers and leverage them. So it's
I'll go with that.
That's just what popped into my head. But yeah, so the superpower, I guess, is just being able to get into someone's head and see where the blocks are and help them sort of unleash their creativity or unleash the things that they're doing with their business. Because you can help them sort of get past any of the things that have, you know, you called it the injuries they've got in their head.
Well, yeah, another way to look at it too is that this is someone comes to me with a car and they want to put a rocket booster on it. And I help them do that, but their car is pointed in this direction. And if it's not the direction they really want to go, all they're going to do is get there faster because of the rocket booster. And so very often I say, well, put the rocket booster on, which direction are you really wanting to go here? You know, when it comes down to things that people choose to sell and whether it is actually enriching their lives, this business that they're in, because they might be making it and we might be able to speed the making of money up. But are we also speeding fulfillment up at the same time? The two aren't always the same. And that's one of the things that I have a problem with in terms of 10X as it's thrown around, because one of my mentors is a cognitive scientist. He's actually the inventor of 10X. So his name's Michael Hewitt-Gleason. And he did his first PhD in lateral thinking. So having learned it from the source, the whole idea that I think most entrepreneurs have is 10X is I just have to earn 10 times more and I'm prepared to work 10 times harder to do it. And very often that leads to just 10 times more trouble as well. So I'm like, well, hang on. Like, there's nothing wrong with earning 10 times more or 100 times more, but there's more to it than that, right? It's actually 10X thinking. That's actually where the first idea came from, is how does everything become 10 times better? Not just how do you get 10 times revenue? That's a very practical discussion I'm having with a lot of people. It's where my kind of X10 entrepreneur comes from as well, is getting people to be their whole life to be 10 times better, not just 10 times revenue.
Yeah, I really like that. It's one of the things I talk about with my clients a lot is you have to be careful of the monster you're building, right? And you know, hopefully make sure you're building the business that's going to give you the life you want. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think a lot of people see like specific businesses, they compare themselves to other businesses. Oh, this guy's doing this amount of revenue, or these guys are having this kind of effect. And they're like, they want that type of business or something like that. And they don't look at what they actually, like the life result is that comes along with that. And sometimes it's exactly what someone wants, right? Like you have people that are, you know, like you know, the Steve Jobs or the Michael Dell or something like that, where they build huge, massive companies. And that is their fulfillment. That's what they want, but that's not what everyone wants. And I think people need to figure out like, you know, what type of business do I want and how does that fit with the lifestyle goals I have? So
that's it. And if an idea, like if the idea of $1 million a year, for example, if that idea, which is a meme, if it's taken over your mind, just because it's taken over your mind and it's directing all of your activities doesn't mean that it's a valid idea. Mm-hmm. And what I find is a lot of people don't even question the idea. Like, who would question wanting to earn $1 million a year? Of course, boom, the idea goes in and off I am for the next 10 years chasing this goal or 5 years or whatever it is. And the scientist in me as well, this is the other thing about it, is to actually say, okay, you have an idea in your head. It's a very simple idea. Is it true? Like, let's actually test. Let's do some science on this. That's a hypothesis, right? That you need to earn
That you want $1 million a year.
Yeah. Okay. That's one hypothesis. What's an alternative hypothesis? I don't know if you've done science or not, but you know, that's when you do an experiment, you also you have the hypothesis that you're testing, which is, you know, I'm going to be happy if I earn $1 million. And then you've got the alternative, which is I don't need $1 million to be happy, right? Or I'm not going to be happy if I have $1 million. They're alternative hypotheses, and you actually test them. And so we end up laughing with my clients, because sometimes the biggest breakthroughs that they have in their thinking come from me asking the most simple of questions. Nothing complicated, just challenging the underlying idea,
the assumptions
that is driving them in the first place, you know?
Yeah. What's interesting is I never did that experiment, but I came to a similar conclusion. For a long time, I thought I need to hit, you know, $100,000 a year or $250,000 or $1 million a year. I had like an income goal in mind, and realized that that's not what I wanted. And it was a number of years ago. My company name now is Five Freedoms. And I talk about the five freedoms are essentially spiritual freedom, political freedom, financial freedom, time and location. And realized that the most important ones for me were the time and location freedom. The amount of money that it takes for me to have the time and location freedom is significantly less than $1 million a year.
Yeah.
Right. I've talked to a few of my clients about that now. And like, I got one of the guys that I just helped him cross $1 million a year mark in his business. And he tells me he's jealous of me. He's like, because I have he's got $1 million a year business. And he's like, but you have the lifestyle I want. Yeah. And I was like, it was an intentional thing on my part that I was like, I realized a number of years ago that I was like, there were things that I wanted more. And I started building my business around getting those things. So it's interesting that you like teach that, because it was something that I sort of stumbled upon.
I had to have an insight into your lifestyle, and it looks great. And I know that you're going through another particular change right now. And I have to ask you outside of the call about whether anything eventful has happened in the last few days.
So yeah, referring to our baby number four, who is on the way. And at any time now, my wife could burst through the door here during our interview and say, hey, it's time to go. But it has not happened yet.
Right.
So maybe.
You know, and so, you know, that with kids is that, again, all of a sudden they don't just require quality time. They do require quantity. Right. And, and that was one of the things I'd always promised myself, is I was always going to be a dad who picked my kids up. Took my kids to school and picked them up from school. And they're both in high school now. And I still do it. I don't have to do it. They're quite able to go to school by themselves, but I want to do it because I get to even just that little ride in the morning and the afternoon. Anyway, so it's the same thing you can appreciate, is that other things become
more important.
For me, at least, I've chosen those as a higher priority.
Yeah. And I did the same thing when my first son was born. One of the commitments I made to my wife, I was like, it's just very specific because it was something that I really wanted. I wanted to be able to have lunch with my kids every day. And it was specifically lunch, not breakfast or dinner. Cause I was like, a lot of dads get to have breakfast and or dinner with their kids, but not very many get to have lunch with their kids every day. And my son's 9 now, and I can count the number of times I've missed lunch with him over the last 9 years on like one hand. And mostly it's just for business events and things like that. And like even one of the last business events I put on for a big, you know, one of our big clients, I got to bring him and show him sort of like what we were doing, because he's getting to that age where it's interesting now to him. So yeah, it's like you choose what your priorities are. And it helps, it really helps define, for me, it helps define business decisions. It's like the filter that you use when you look at business decisions it's like one of the questions I ask myself is, if I do this, if I invest my time and resources and stuff in my business in this thing, is that going to mean I have more or less lunches with my kid? Right. You use those as your lens, your filter.
Yeah, and the times that I've, and the there's still times, you know, we're not all perfect. I've made decisions that go against that.
Yeah, me too.
I think I'm going to make them just for a short period of time, right? Because there's some other goal that's come up or some other project that's too good to miss up and everything. Then whenever I've done it, it's actually never to me been worth it.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess I've had to have that experience a number of times just to have that lived experience. And I should have gone through those experiences because they were the teachers, right? The experiences taught me to have a better filter, to be able to make better decisions in the future, because I've, you know,
I went lesson repeated until lesson learned, right?
Yeah, exactly right. And it sounds like the neighbors are doing some drilling or something. I'm not sure if that audio is
coming. It's okay. I can't hear it. So we're good. Yeah. So to move on a little bit from superpowers to the other side of that, which is the fatal flaw that every superhero has, which, you know, Superman has his kryptonite. I tell people my fatal flaw is I tend to be a perfectionist, and I will let perfectionism get in the way of accomplishing things. Mm. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what you think your fatal flaw is, and then what you have been doing or what you have done in the past to help sort of rectify that and overcome some of that in your business.
Yeah, well, my take on fatal flaws is you can't have the good without the bad.
Yeah.
You can't have one side without the other side. You know, and there's a saying, you know, the bigger the front, the bigger the back, right? If you look at a circle, right?
Yeah.
And so rather than there being good qualities and bad qualities, every quality is just a quality that has good and bad application. And yeah. So that's the way I've come to see it, right? So one of the best things that I've learned to do is to learn. As a result of that, because I'm so capable of it, the curse of that is the needing and wanting that constant stimulation of learning new things.
Right? Yeah.
Now, some people might class that as bright, shiny object syndrome, and it's not, because when you look at that, that's people who are unable to stick with something and just literally do keep jumping from one thing to the other. I find myself so deeply interested in so many things that there's not enough time in the day. And if really all I had to do was to work out, look after the kids, and just spend time learning, I could easily find myself just doing that. So, you know, the key is going, okay, I'm learning stuff, but I also really enjoy getting results as well. But funnily mm-hmm. enough, this is just a statement where I've come, like the results are great, but I've always enjoyed the learning more than the result.
More. Right? Yeah.
So that means I could go ahead and learn something, almost apply it, but then not need to apply it because I already got my...
You already got the satisfaction.
I got satisfaction from learning something, right? And then especially if I might teach that or share, because I'm just a natural born teacher, I like to teach what I've learned and what I've found out. So, you know, a lot of the times, and this is kind of contrary to what's in the marketplace a lot of the times I've taught things to my clients that they've gone and done and that have worked, even though I haven't done that exact thing. But then that's the beauty of information. Information isn't valid whether I've done it or not. Information is valid, especially scientific information. It's valid because it's valid.
Because it's valid, yeah. I call that head knowledge versus heart knowledge. Heart knowledge being stuff that you've personally experienced, and head knowledge being stuff that's just, it's just known, like, you know, gravity makes you go down, that
exactly
kind of stuff.
Exactly right. I mean, I don't have to have put up an opt-in form and collected names and emails to know that if you put up an opt-in form, you're going to collect names and emails. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Anyway, so I would say, yeah, that would be it. That would be it. If I look at all of it, I would say that would be it. You know.
What's interesting is I've never really thought of that as a flaw in myself, but I have the same problem where, like, I tend to like learning more than I like doing the things, and I find that I've had to I have to build systems for myself. That part of my learning process is how do I turn this into a system that someone else can do for me, because I know I'm never going to do it. Like, I'm more interested in like learning whatever the next thing is. So I'm like, if I have to do that in my business, I'm like, okay, I've learned it. Now the next part of the learning is how do I turn that thing that I've learned into a system that someone else can do for me, and then get them to do it. And then the whole learning process that goes into the, you know, where the problems are with that system and fixing it and like making that better. And then after I've done that and I can step away from it, and I can go on to learn something else. That's sort of how I've dealt with that problem. Because like I would do the same thing. I could spend all day reading and listening to books and just like never actually accomplish anything. Because I would be totally satisfied and broke.
Yeah. And broke. Well, look, there's a whole lot of character traits that have been found to define, entrepreneurs. And successful.
Yeah.
So a whole lot of qualitative research has been done looking at entrepreneurs from different industries, different size businesses, to find out what is it that makes an ultra entrepreneur. And there's a whole lot of skills. And interestingly, one of them is what they call profit focus. Only one of them, right? The other nine things I think come around creativity and ability to delegate and a range of other things. But one of them is profit focus. And when I had a look at myself, I was strong in almost everything except profit focus. It wasn't just a natural thing for me to get up and look and go, what are the numbers today? How much money are we making? Right. So that's something that I've had to say, well, okay, because I recognize that, it's something I've had to do on purpose as opposed to just getting up and being natural. And that's a system I've had to try and apply to remind myself to be profit focused. Oh yeah, there's an outcome here. And that's not a weakness.
I think that's a really important thing to for people to understand is if you realize what your natural inclinations are versus not, and you don't have to be stuck by what those natural inclinations are. You can be intentional about doing things different. One of the things I tell my kids all the time actually is you're defined not by how you think, but how you act. And you might not think as a profit focused person, but if you get up in the morning and you're like, I have to set an alarm and I have to look, you know, add onto my calendar, look at the numbers today. And then you go and actually look at the numbers, then you're actually the kind of person who has profit focused, even though it's not a thing that's happening up here, right? You're just forcing yourself to do that. So I don't exactly know what you call that, but I know it's a skill set that people needed to develop in a lot of different ways.
Look, people can, you know, there's a lot of things in the kind of personal development space, speaking about doing what you love, which is great. But some of the most transformative things you can do is to learn to do something, to love something that you currently hate.
Yeah.
Right. There's a really good example about this. I forget the exact location. It's in Brazil somewhere. And it's a whole lot of people who are so concerned about the environment that they actually go and they spend time in the big rubbish dumps finding recyclable material. They hate going to the rubbish tip, the dump, except now that they don't. They've gone there because some other purpose, some other higher purpose has required them to go do something that would be distasteful and stinky and smelly and unhealthy to all of us. Yet they've now gone, and because they've done it and they see this other purpose, they've come to learn to love what they hate. It's the same with exercise. You get someone who hasn't exercised for a few years and you put them in a gym and they get red-faced and puffy and it hurts and they're sore for 3 days later. They hate that. Versus someone who's come to love exercise. And so it's a dangerous idea that we should only do what we love.
I tell people
doing some of the most incredible things in life.
Yeah. I tell people, that, passion is not a foundation, that mastery is. So mastery begets passion, not the other way around. And the better you get at things, the more you tend to like them and become passionate about them.
How many people are magical, you know, lucky enough to wake up and just know what their passion in life is? It's not many.
I've not met anyone yet.
Right.
You know? So, and if you
wait around looking for that to somehow dawn on you or be shown to you, then, you know, what are you going to do in the meantime? That's what I say to people. Look, in the meantime, why don't you get really good at something?
No. Yeah, why don't you get really good at it? Yeah, that's amazing. So if we were to move on a little bit on what would you say your common enemy is, right? Every superhero has a common enemy. It's the thing that you fight against, that if you could go into every entrepreneur, all of your clients' life and just remove that enemy, that villain, what would that be if you could define it?
It's all this. It's the thinking. It's the slew of ideas, this massive constant string of ideas that we have that go unquestioned and that actually create an incredible amount of struggle in people's lives. And whether it's struggle or whether it's stopping them from just doing the same they're doing, but much easier, that seems to be the thing that is constantly there. So all I have to do is listen to people and I can smell it, right? The bullshit. This family friendly, but all I have to do, because I can just hear in the language the words that people use that reflect an underlying idea that's an unquestioned idea, an idea that's untested. And so much of our, you know, look, the way the kind of the brain works, and it's pretty phenomenal, is that we actually have our thoughts before we become aware of them, right? So we've now got a technology called fast functional MRI that it's so fast in terms of measuring blood flow that you can see the thought, well, you don't see the thought, but you see the thought you see the evidence of the thought being created in the brain, and then you see the person become aware of it. So they've actually done this with checkers.
That's crazy.
Or, right, chess, right? Where they can predict what move the person is going to make based on brain imaging before the person is aware of the decision they're going to make. So this idea that
it's
are
precognition.
What's that?
Precognition, like your computers can tell what you're going to think before you think it.
That's exactly what's going on. So we had this idea that we are the ones driving the ship, but what's happening is that our decisions are being presented to us, right? In the same way that our emotions get presented to us. So the way it works with, a classic example of, you're in the jungle or something and you see a tiger. Your heart is already racing faster. Adrenaline's already been released. Fear has already been generated. And then you become aware of all of this and try to process it, but you're already starting to run. Yeah, so it happens fast, but that's the kind of order it happens in, because everything happens down in the lower parts of our brain. And when I mean lower, I don't mean lesser. I mean just literally lower down. And
the subconscious parts.
Yeah, all those non-conscious parts that aren't to do with being politically correct. They're not to do with thinking or logic or anything like that at all. These are all modern concepts, right? These are just like reactive things happen in our bodies. And so everyone kind of gets that idea, right? So what happens is I see a really good example is if you put a frog in a cage or, a tank, whatever, and it had a lot of dead flies, the frog would starve. Because what happens is when a fly is going past a frog, the image of the fly goes into the frog's brain, but before it even then passes to its visual system and then goes to its consciousness for it to become aware that there's a fly, its tongue's already gone out and brought the fly in, right? So there's a reflex, just like the knee reflex, if you've ever been to the doctor and they've tapped your knee.
Yeah, where they tap your knee, yeah.
That's what's happening to their tongue. That's why they can be so fast, because when they've calculated how long it would take for the brain to process, oh, there's a fly, it's right there, I better put my tongue out. For the frog to consciously do that, it wouldn't be fast enough and it would miss the fly. So that's just an example in a frog, right? But it's an example of something happens to us, our brain reacts at this non-conscious level and things happen as a result. And then we become aware. Yeah. The frog just becomes aware it's chewing a fly now. That's pretty cool.
Right? I've noticed it. That same kind of phenomenon happens with driving, right? I've noticed that you can forget yourself and you will just like go in automatic mode and drive. And it's because your brain's processing all this stuff and doing it. And like, if you've ever like, I do this all the time. Like when you're driving, if you ever just like pay attention to how your arm is moving on the steering wheel and realize that like, you're not doing any of that. It's just happening. Like your body's just making micro corrections all the time. And I'm sure it's doing with all sorts of sports, but driving is just, you can like actually pay attention to like your hands and stuff and see what they're doing. But it brings credence to the idea that your brain is thinking before you are.
Yeah, it's cool. And that's called ideomotor movement, which is movement associated with the dominant idea that's in your head. But you're not necessarily aware of that. I bet you if you ended up in Florida and not knowing how you got there, is that right?
It happens. You go from LA and Florida and be like, dang it, I got all the way across the country.
Yeah.
what did you call that though?
Ideomotor activity.
Ideomotor activity. Never heard of that before. So I didn't know it had a name.
Yeah. William James, psychologist, first kind of talked about it in 18 something or other. Yeah. So rather than it being a reflex, which is what the fly example was, and rather it being volitional where, I've got my hands on the steering wheel, I'm going to turn it. Ideomotor is all that other movement that we do that is not driven by a conscious decision. It's just, but it's still driven by a decision. It's just all happening non-consciously. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. So, to boil that all down, swipe
in Facebook. That's ideomotor activity, right?
I say, if we were to break it down, the common enemy is untested ideas. If you could remove untested ideas from your clients just with a magic wand, that's what you would. Is what you'd get rid of.
Or get them to learn how to start questioning them.
Yeah,
because often when question ideas, things change dramatically. Yeah.
Awesome. So, let's change gears here a little bit and talk a little bit about your favorite tools. Right, every hero has their tools. Thor has his big magic hammer. Batman's got his batarangs. you know, maybe it's just Evernote for you. You like the way you organize things in Evernote. What are some of the tools that you use on a regular basis to accomplish the work that you do?
Look, I have a big, my favorite tool is a big A3 sheet of art paper. You know, the big books you can
get. Yeah, the big ones.
Yeah. So that's what that's one of my favorite tools. And I've got a whole lot of different kind of Sharpies and fine line texters. And I map out all my funnels on those first, and I put my ideas down, and I do all sort of stuff. So that's a really, I find that I enjoy that as a tool. That's number one. And then I think when it comes to kind of digital tools, I've got my kind of my stack of things that I like, and like any of us in this game, we've all got our favorite tools. But you know, yeah. I love working with WordPress. I have developed mastery around a certain things. You probably you know Thrive themes and their suite of plugins to be able to do my work. I find I'm in there a lot because I build funnels, you know, and I just can make that stuff work. And it's one of those really important things to decide, because there's a whole lot of now different builders for WordPress, for example, and they could be really good, but there's always a cost with having to go and learn another software app. Yeah. And even if it might be better on these and not so good on those, it's the time and cost it takes for you to go and learn that.
The opportunity
that
comes costs.
My whole learning enemy, right? Yeah. That weakness around, okay, is this me just being going down another thing just because I could learn it? Or is it really going to make a difference to the outcome? And so I've decided to stick with a particular thing. And I'm like, I love
it. I find that interesting too, because I discuss this a lot with my clients. Is they'll come up and be like, I'm not making sales, right? Or I'm not getting the sales I want. Maybe I need to change my scheduling software. Maybe I need to change my page builder. Maybe I need to switch from ClickFunnels to lead pages, right? Maybe I need to go from Infusionsoft to ActiveCampaign. Whatever we tend to like to default to the tool is the problem rather than the messaging or the marketing. So I see that happen a lot, where it's like, you know, maybe we should just stick with the tool you have and see if we can nail the marketing, because pretty much all the tools at this point will do what you need to do. I see that problem happen a lot.
Yeah, I guess the only, you just cut out a little then. What was that?
I didn't say anything.
Okay. The only thing though I'd say about that is that you, back to this whole thing about designing the life that you want, you don't want your life mm-hmm. to be constrained by the technology that you chose either. So there does sometimes come a breaking point where you go, you know what, this particular technology is
not working.
Or it's making business decisions for me, right? As opposed to me having the flexibility to make the business decision I want. I have to make it this way because that's the way that technology works. If you start coming up against hard things like that, then there could be good reason to look at some other alternatives. But looking at other alternatives just because they're there isn't.
So how would you help someone navigate that? Like if they were thinking to themselves, I've got a technology problem, or maybe do I have a technology problem or not? Is probably the better question. Like how do they determine if it's like, I just want to change because I like to change things and I'm, you know, they're maybe misusing their time versus it's actually constraining them.
I think it's in the couple of times I've had that particular situation arise, it's been more about them trying to understand the capabilities of the tool they've got and what's actually really going on. And if there's an easy way to do something. And so then it really becomes a case by case example about, you know, is the technology really in the way, or would it be so much easier for them to do it this way? It's a case by case discussion. I think it comes down to it. And admittedly too, when I've had those discussions, they were even going back a few years. So with a couple of key people I remembering, and back then some of the technology differences were quite stark. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like you say, now it's everything's become so easy and so useful. Most of the time, like you say, the technology can do what it needs to do, no matter which one you're using. Or if you go from here to there, what you gain here, you lose. So
you lose something over here.
Yeah, it's again about going, are you worrying about stuff that doesn't even matter to the big picture?
Mm-hmm.
Are you tired of trying to write webinars that don't consistently convert? How would you like to have a webinar that effortlessly created sales in your online business? You can. Introducing the Webinar Alchemy Workshop. Webinar Alchemy Workshop is an online masterclass that will help you write incredibly persuasive webinars for your online courses quickly and easily. Using what you learn in this class, you can build a webinar that educates your entire audience while still creating sales. For a limited time, you can purchase this masterclass for only $7, and you'll get the exact framework I've personally used to help my clients sell more than $1 million worth of online coaching and training just over the last year. Simply text the word ALCHEMY, A-L-C-H-E-M-Y, to 444-999, and I'll send you all the details.
The music is by Purple Planet Music. Visit www.purple-planet.com.
I want to bring back your A3 paper real quick, because I've noticed a common thread among entrepreneurs that drawing things out tends to be a big part of their thinking process. I'm curious if there's any sort of neurological stuff that goes into that, because it's very common that I've noticed a lot of entrepreneurs, whether that's on a piece of paper or it's in a notebook, or, you know, I tend to use mind maps for the same kind of thing, just because I have no drawing abilities. If I drew it on paper, I would never be able to read it again. So, but I have to have like a brain dump place, right? And I'm curious if there's any science behind that and how that sort of affects entrepreneurs.
Very much what we do with our bodies has an impact on our brain and the way it works. So even just, there'd be numerous neuroscience things to explain what you just talked about or why that's a good thing. And I'll go for two examples here, right? One is that if I got you to hold a plank position, mm-hmm. For, you know, 30 seconds, 40 seconds, a minute, after holding a plank, you know, that is hard to do, but you could get up and walk. But if you had to do a plank again, you'd be tired, you'd be fatigued, because that particular group of muscles, the way you did, you know, held them, has become fatigued and needs to be replenished. And in our brains are the same way. You know, thinking is a very, very energy expensive activity to do, and also doing certain things. So you think about this, we sit forever and we're typing like this is what we're doing, that's the action. It's just driving certain neural pathways all the time that do get fatigued. And so it can be a really good idea to do something different other than this. And yeah. If you think about getting an A3 bit of paper out, it might seem like a subtle difference, but doing this is a different movement than doing this. And I can tell you right now that this, you know, it's very specific neural pathways. They end up getting fatigued. I mean, our body's great at replenishing them. You can sit for hours and hours doing this, right? Because I know that you and I have both done that. But doing something different is just makes a different environment in your brain. And I find that I can be much faster. You know, there's probably not much difference between A3ing it or doing it on some kind of iPad or tablet. It's the same kind of activity, just doing something different.
It's like you've just physically changed your space, right? You're just doing different things with your muscles to accomplish the same thinking.
Yeah. And if you're doing different things with your muscles, you know, there's only, you know, a very few stops between this and your muscle anyway. So the fact that you're doing different things with your muscles means you're doing different things with your brain. And you change the environment by what you do, which kind of leads me to this next idea, is that we can often only, you know, somewhere between 10 and 20 minutes, absolutely focused time is about all we've got. And we might think that we can sit there for an hour or two and be focused. But in actual fact, if we were to put measures on our brain, we'd find that after 10 minutes, you know, we start to lose focus, right? We might bring it back, but we start to. If you get up every 10, 20 minutes and you even just throw your arms around the place, even for a minute or two, literally this kind of, in the full body movement, it's just not doing this whole focus thing. It's giving your brain a chance to refresh and activating a whole lot of other parts in your brain, kind of like waking it up. It's like a system reboot, I guess you want to think of it that way. And then down again, you'll actually be more productive and be able to focus better than if you just sat a whole hour and did nothing else.
The Pomodoro technique is based on that science, I believe, where you spend 10 or 15 minutes focused and then you take a minute to just not.
Move off, yeah.
Yeah, just do something different. Stand up, walk around, get a drink of water. And it's probably healthier for you anyways to get up and move a little bit.
Oh, it is, you know, in terms of back pain and all those kinds of things too, there was that research that came out, it's a large study, and there's a thing called all-cause mortality. And what we know is if you sit for more than 5 hours a day, that you increase your risk of dying from everything.
That's why, really?
cause mortality, right? So I'm sure some of those
associations. So I need a standing desk immediately.
Yeah. One of my clients the other day doesn't have just a standing desk, but has his computer up on a treadmill. And he, you know, when I'm had him on webinars and stuff, he's walking there with his headphones on, and you can see him bouncing up and down as he's walking on his treadmill. You know, That's a great idea.
Cool. So I like that discussion. I like the idea. And it's one of the things I've been putting off, like buying an iPad or something like that, just because I know I would use it, but like, I was like, the use case would be very small for me. It would just be like writing notes and stuff like that, but it might be a worthwhile investment just in my own health and creativity to do something like that.
One of those iPad Pros or whatever, just to
get just get a big one so you can move around it. And well, the other thing too is like my laptop it's a very specific position you have to be in to use a laptop, right? You have to sit up and you have to sit in front of the keyboard and you have to be able to see the keyboard and you have to have it like on something, where like a tablet or a piece of paper or something like that, you can like sit on the couch or go outside and you can actually like, I don't know, you can use it differently. So
yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so almost last question here. Your own personal heroes. Right. Every hero has their own personal heroes. You know, Frodo had Gandalf, Luke had Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, Robert Kiyosaki had his rich dad, who you mentioned earlier. Who are some of your heroes, your mentors? You know, were they real life? Were they people in books? Maybe they're just peers that were a few years ahead of you, sort of. And how did they influence your life and what you've accomplished so far in your business?
Yeah. Well, let's stick with a fun example. And let's actually talk about superheroes. The first time I saw Iron Man, that superhero caught my attention. That movie was it. And for a couple of reasons that most people, why they like Iron Man. One was that, again, he wasn't just Superman, and the reason he's got powers is because he's in our atmosphere, right? It was, he had privilege in terms of finance and et cetera, but he had to do something with that privilege, and he did, and he became expert at what he did, and he had a life experience that was transformative as well. You know, he was all about the money and then had the life experience about what was more important, and then built this amazing thing that gave him the ability to do it. But he's a flawed character, right? With him, you've got the good, you got the good and the bad. And so I think so many people are attracted to that superhero because he's not perfect. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I could be like him because, you know, there's the flaws, right? So that's a great example. And I related to it again, because it's that the word I use is meritorious, right? It's like when you go through university, that the way you get rewarded and you do well is by merit, right? There's no getting through. Well, you know, you hope there's no getting through for other reasons, right? You know, pay a little more or, you know, did some favors, but what you want is I think we all want that level playing field, right? Where
we can work and get the result.
Where you can work and get the result. And there's actually an entire discipline called positive deviance around this. When we hear the word deviant, we think of it in a negative context, right? But deviance is a statistical term where you've got an average distribution of people, right? And the average is here. And positive deviance is, bang on the camera, I've got to get the other way. But positive deviance is just deviating from the normal, but in a positive direction.
Yeah.
And what the field of study is, you go into communities, and it could be anything from entrepreneurs all the way through to whatever it is. And you look for examples of people who are getting an extraordinary result, even though they've got the same resources as everyone else.
Yeah. And see what's actually letting them do that.
Yeah. So then you go in and you observe and you discover what it is that they're doing. And because there's no special circumstance, there's no, oh, well, we happen to have, you know, a gold river running by and we just dip into the gold. And so that's why, you know, there's no kind of special thing. Then what you can do is learn what they're doing, and then it's teachable, right? And then you can help everybody begin to learn that. And I think that's very much the case of online or digital business. Is that, yes, people do have special privileges, but there's a heck of a lot of people who are doing incredibly well who just started out deciding to learn how to master this side of things. And it's all available for them to learn, you know.
That could almost be an alternate name for this show, because positive deviance, because that's what we're looking to do, is like, let's look at people who have, you know, unnaturally good results and see what's behind the hero's mask, so to speak. Like, what are they doing differently than other people? Because they have the same access to resources that we do. You know, same 24 hours in the day and You know, life experiences and whatnot. So that's really cool. Okay, so the actual last question for the interview is your guiding principles, right? So what are the top one or two principles or actions that you use regularly, like on a daily basis, that contribute to the success and the influence you have in your business that you sort of, you wish you knew you had had when you started out?
When I started out, I was very driven, like most people, by ambition. And it's a good character trait, right? That's an ambitious person, right? And you get things done and then you get status as a result of that. And you get all this positive feedback for ambition. Except that I really found it hard to enjoy my results as I went along. It's not that I didn't enjoy them, but it seemed so temporary. You know, like you'd spend all this time and effort to achieve something and then boom, you would literally achieve it in a second. And you might feel good about it thinking back on it, but the time came and went, the actual achievement so ambitious about came and went so quickly that it was transient. Right. And so, and then this is what I began to discover in a lot of the clients I coach, right, is this driven ambition. And yet they were angry, frustrated, annoyed at things. There was always something going wrong. There's always some drama. I'm going, none of this feels right. Especially when I anchor it back to the early experiences I had with my father, whose entire life has been about helping people find peace and calm, right, in this moment and being content in the moment. And for me, I realized that I was ambitious, but I wasn't content. And I had to reframe how I thought about that so that it did become a guiding principle. And so what I've found is this, and this is just my, the words have meaning for me. You might have words that mean differently for me, but I've kind of tossed aside the idea of ambition at all. And what I've realized is that I'm actually a very creative person. We all are. We're creating things. And I don't mean creative in terms of poetry and songs and music. And I'm talking about the creation of stuff. And in business, that's what we're doing. We're creating. And so in any moment, I can either be at peace, I'm resting, I'm chilling out, or I can be active. And in that moment, I want to be creative. I want to be creating something. And if I'm creating something or I'm relaxing, either way, I'm content. So I found a way to be in the moment and be creative or chilled. Either way, I'm content. And I'm never saying I'll be content or happy when. I'm not driven by that ambition to say, when I finally get that, that's when I can be happy. That's when I can relax. And so I would say that overall, that is what I get up in the day to do, is to find and live in that moment of contentment. But I can be incredibly creative and be working toward things for the future. I still have goals in the future. The difference is not being ambitious about them and then putting off being content in the moment
until you get there.
Thing that's going to be in the future. Yeah.
So that's it does. It's magical. And actually I have something similar I do in my life. I use a different set of vocabulary for it. But I call that thought, that almost the exact same thought process. I call that having contented ambition. And the idea for me is that, I have things I'm moving towards, but the journey is the thing that I'm enjoying, right? The journey is the thing that I'm having the contentment with. Yeah. Because that's really where the magic is. The magic is in the journey. And cause destinations, especially in life, since we are, you know, we're passing through time, every moment is transient and you're just there for, you know, a split moment in time. Right. And if you can learn to be content in the journey, which is something you sort of have to like train yourself for, because it's not something we're taught like culturally, is to be content in the journey. Then, and I figure the ambition part of that is just having a destination for your journey. Like I sort of know the direction I'm going, and that's where the ambition is. But the contentment's with the journey. So it's very similar. It's cool that you have something similar that you do for your business.
Yeah, because that the future actually never comes. It just never does. Yeah. That's the thing. We all know it too, right? Tomorrow never comes. It's always now. And so the way the brain works too is that anything about the future is just a complete imagination. And we've got a million and more, you know, alternate futures rushing toward us depending on what we do in the moment. It's all about the moment. And then the past too, you'll know from if you've ever come across any neuroscience research, is the past, our memory, our recall of the past is biased. right? The way we recall the past is a hazy memory anyway. It's not like a hard drive. We go back and we rewatch the same thing. So if that's dodgy and the future is just anything we can imagine, what's the only thing that's happening is literally what's happening right now. That's it. And you know, some religious practices have focused on that, but it doesn't need to be anything about spirituality. It's about...
It's just reality.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. Okay, so this has been really fun. I have one more thing that I do on the show. It's not really a question. I call it the Hero Challenge. And the Hero Challenge is, it's just, do you have someone in your life, in your network, that you think has a really cool hero story that we should tell on this show that you'd be able to introduce and bring on the show and sort of tell and share their story?
I do.
Who would that be? And okay, why do you think they should be on the show?
His name is Glenn Campbell. And he now, in a similar kind of field to me, he works with leaders, but his background is incredible, actually, through advertising agencies. So he's been MD and CEO of major advertising agencies, in charge of, you know, budgets of hundreds of millions of dollars. And he's also got I won't tell you his story, right? Because that's the whole point.
It's fascinating,
Right, it's fascinating. But the work he's doing in business with leaders is really quite amazing as well. And his background story is a classic. And he is a force to be reckoned with. So, yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Well, we'll reach out after the show to see if we can find a way to connect with him. Last thing, thanks for being on the show. And where can people find you? And what should they, if they're struggling, what kind of things are they struggling with that they should reach out to you for? Where can they find you to reach out if they want to?
Well, it's Facebook is a great place to find me, and also the website. And I've got a slightly different spelling for my name. So this is me when I was a kid. I was pedantic, right? My name's Nicholas. Yeah. But there's no K in Nicholas. So I couldn't understand why you would spell Nick N-I-C-K. So I just spelled it N-I-C. I remember the time when I just said, Mum, you can't call me Nicholas anymore. It's got to be Nick, right? And it's spelled N-I-C, right? So my website's NickLucas.com. And that's the same on Facebook. So either of places there. And again, it's really what I've discussed today, you know, is my real passion is to help entrepreneurs better succeed in their business, but with an absolute flair for helping them get their mind right, because all profit starts in the mind, and that's what I do.
I love it. Okay, so recap there. It's Nick Lucas, NICLUCAS.com, or on Facebook, Nick Lucas, and they can find you. And I've been for those of you who don't know, I've been working with Nick for a few months now on a couple of clients together, and he's been fantastic. So if you have an opportunity to reach out and talk to him, or you have struggles with your messaging or any of the brain stuff, definitely reach out to Nick. It'll be a giant positive for your business. So
I scratch the surface and then all this stuff comes out underneath. It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, thank you for joining us today, Nick, and appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, awesome.